Ariel is a community of body, mind, and spirit seekers and believers. Ariel Talk Time, hosted by founder and business psychic Victoria Lynn Weston. She shares thought-provoking conversations with lifestyle experts to awaken and enhance your way of living. If you like this interview, please post a review on iTunes or Stitcher.
Hi everyone, it's Victoria. Thanks for tuning in. Today my guest is a light body meditation teacher and author. Her name is Margaret Harrell. Margaret is one of the most experienced qualified light body teachers in the Orin DeBenn School of Dwayne Packer and Sanaya Roman. She's an intuitive teacher and she also studied 3 years at the Jung Institute in Zurich. As an author, she published a 4-part memoir series. Imagine that. Most of us can barely get through one book of a memoir. She has a 4-part, which talks about her amazing life and journey living in Europe and studying at the Carl Jung Institute and her amazing, you know, days as an editor and her personal relationship with the Gonzo journalist Hunter Thompson. Now let's go connect with Margaret.
Let's introduce you to everybody. Margaret, it's a pleasure to have you here again today. And I love talking about you, or rather I should say, I love talking with you because you have such a diverse background in that. And you are one of the lucky people in the few that I ever knew that went to the Carl Jung Institute in Switzerland, which is quite extraordinary. But we're here to talk today about a couple of things. A, meditation, and B, I thought we'd open up with your 4-volume series on memoirs. I don't know about you or our listeners and that, but I love reading biographies. It doesn't matter if it's a famous person or one that may be not so famous, but an interesting background, because at the end of the day, it's always about really good storytelling. And you can be, you know, basically a person that made one cherry pie in your entire life, but you can write a book about it. And it can be the most exquisite mystery and delicious, you know, treat you ever read in your entire life. So let's talk about the one series, the first one. Or rather, let's talk about the Hunter Thompson, because until I met you, I never knew of Hunter Thompson. But I hear he's so famous, and Johnny Depp wants to do his movie and possibly even buy the film rights to your biography and all that. So tell us about Hunter Thompson and about your 4-volume memoir series.
Absolutely, but I hope you planted the idea about Johnny Depp buying my memoir, but I mean, that's not in the works at this point, but you never know what will happen. It's true, because he loves Hunter, and he loves the young Hunter, and the one that I knew best, the one that I worked with, was the young Hunter when he was not famous, but he was just as interesting and unpredictable and authentic as ever. And yet he wasn't so far famous. He wasn't like a personality on the national and in some cases global scene. So yes, the first book, the way I came to even write it and to include his letters was that when I was, and I say that I tell this story at the beginning of the book because, like you say, I want things to be storytelling. So when I was at Random House, I did leave because I was a writer too. In fact, we were two struggling novelists at that point. We both thought of ourselves as novelists, though he was also a journalist. So when I left Random House, it was midnight. I was cleaning out my office. And I was toying, balancing, weighing whether I should take his letters because they were in part business, you know, the business, but in his incredible style. They were in part business about publishing Hell's Angels, but they were in part very personal to me and even only to me. So I finally said, oh, you know, it could be, you could go either way, I'll take them. So I took all the letters, and then fortunately, in a way I did, I don't know what would have happened to them, you know, after that. This was a small Random House, then you got mergers, you got resales. Heaven knows what would have happened to them. And contrary to the way he did, in many cases, most of these letters he had no carbon copy of. In fact, some were written on two sides or handwritten, and there were postcards and telegrams and various with doodles and all this stuff. So anyway, I kept them, and I actually took them to Zurich with me to the Jung Institute because I don't know how it happened. I did, but I did. And then when I came, then I moved to Belgium and back to the U.S. eventually after about 14 years. And I never thought of publishing them till he died, and then I started writing my reflections. And as I did so, I had to contact Douglas Brinkley, his executor, or the project would have fallen through. And he told me, yes, use them, do anything you want with them, do write it. And Hunter has told me all about you. So in that way, I got a little bit updated to the fact that, like me, he was still remembering fondly, even up to 2005 when he died, that adventure we had had. We had several adventures. So that gave me an opening into my life, because it's very hard to find a story which can lead you from very personality-oriented, as Jung would say, very everyday life, male-female relationship-oriented, all the way to mystical, spiritual, modern, you know, ways of expanding your consciousness. But he gave me an entry card where people would get interested in me because they were interested in this story, because there was a romantic element too, and there was a biographical element regarding him. So from there I took stepping stones over four volumes till the last one is about spirituality, my work teaching the light body courses, and so forth. So that's my little summary.
That's very good, and I would recommend anybody looking for an interesting gift this holiday season is to look up Margaret Harrell's Keep This Quiet four-volume series memoir, because it's quite extraordinary. Most people just can't get one book out, but she's got four-volume series, and they're all quite extraordinary, and each one unique, that talks about her life journey from marrying... Would you marry someone? You married a French guy, right, over in Belgium there?
Belgium, yes. So that's... He was in the Flemish part of Belgium, yeah. But we lived in Morocco, and then...
You lived all over the place. It's just...
And a little bit in Belgium. So I that was part of the attraction to him for me. I loved the exoticness of it all. I loved the deep culture, you know, European culture that he had. Not to mention he was a poet and very marvelous drawing, you know, expert. But he considered himself a poet and even a novelist. And I was fascinated by the way he approached everything and the culture he brought with it. But he was kind of a wild, crazy person. So.
That's very good. But now we're going to segue into meditation, because that's basically what you focus on today. You teach meditation classes, and you're also what we would consider like a spiritual advisor for people that want to consult with someone looking for some type of balance and combining that with, you know, meditation and that. And you also teach some classes, and you have one that you teach about, you know, radiance and that. I guess you could tell us first how you got into meditation and why you think it's important for other people to learn more about meditation, and that you don't have to sit in a yoga position for an hour to gain benefits from it.
Well, I had a dramatic event in my life when I was married, when I was off in the rocker and so on. It was like a bohemian life, and the one thing I did start that was traditional spiritual work was dream work. I began, and that came from reading Carl Jung when he said you have to study your dreams if you are going to know yourself. So that was a direct challenge to me.
He said that actually, Carl Jung.
Oh,
I gotta
yes.
Write that down. You have to study your dreams.
He said, I'm paraphrasing, anyone who wants to know themselves or understand themselves must study their dreams. And so he made it you know, there was no way out. He said you had to. And he wrote fascinatingly about what you could get from out of your dreams. And so that was in Morocco, and that I tell a little bit in the second, third, and fourth. I'm into dreams, especially the third volume, which is at the Jung Institute. But so that eased me into spiritual work, though I think every artist is already in spiritual work. But that eased me into it. And by the time before I left Morocco, my spiritual teacher and somewhat boyfriend in the past, but spiritual teacher for all time, died. And I was so shocked, and I didn't know in advance that it knocked me out. And I realized that I had been in my dreams anticipating it. And then at the same time, Jung, whom I was reading, said that there is an anticipatory shadow of death that comes before it. And you can see it in dreams and synchronicities and things that are warnings or that are preparation. And that was astonishing to me that I then, at the same time reading that, looked in my dreams and saw, I could see all the symbols and realize that I had known it. Because what I was writing in my, what I call my big book at the time, showed me that I knew that he was ill. Because to top all that, he was the model for my main character, and I was letting my main character die. So obviously, in my unconscious awareness, picked up and supported in my dreams, I was getting the information that he was dying. But I was so astonished that, besides the fact that the marriage was kind of crumbling at that time, it sort of gave me the courage to leave. Then from that point, so that was the beginning of my spiritual studies, the dreams, the realizing at that point that I thought Milton Klonsky was guiding me. And so therefore I had to say, well, what are spirit guides? Do they exist? And so I was like the very most beginner as far as officially how people get into spirituality work. Though, like I was saying, I think every artist is already doing spirituality work in their intuition. But so then I went to the Jung Institute, and I had an initiation really instigated by this person who had died. So when I left the Institute after 3 years and went to Belgium, I was all set to really dive into, I was then soon alone, and I was all set to just focus on various spirituality work, one of which was to start Awakening Your Light Body in 1992. Prior to that, I had had two years of spiritual work and a general introduction to, like, studying your aura, reading your aura, NLP, a various eclectic kind of preparation, and in that we did guided meditations. So that's how I got to meditation. I had the time, my whole focus, because it's important that you're invested in it, my whole focus was in finding answers to what was happening to me.
And so today, if an individual is looking to find answers to themselves, what are three steps you might suggest they start with?
I always think that you can look right under your feet. You know, you can look very far out, but you can find many answers about things that they're so close to you that you are ignoring them. So one thing is to look at the opportunities and the questions. What is your question that's inside you? So look inside and find some, begin to build a relationship with yourself inside. One way I did that, as I said, was through dreams, because if you build a relationship with your unconscious, it begins communicating more and more and more. And then, of course, there are various kinds of courses, books, everything outside. But it has to be something you're passionately inside yourself drawn toward, and find a need for, and on the outside, then you'll be attracting things on the outside once you have an inner preparedness.
Well, how do I get my inner preparedness ready? I mean, do I have? I mean, I like to meditate. I probably meditate in a non-conventional way, but so I spend 10-15 minutes trying to get into what some people might call their happy space, or just getting into a higher self and to being focused in that. But how do I get into that other level of preparedness? Because as you know, there's all sorts of levels of meditation.
Yes, and there are. And that's where you get into what is meditation. So I would kind of simplify it. There are many, many kinds of meditation, like walking out in nature and calling it a walking meditation, where you empty your mind and fill it up with nature sounds and silence and slow movement of time. There are many kinds of meditation. But meditation, what it does, and starting with the most traditional kind, is you shift from what is called clock time chronology, or Greeks called it Chronos time, where your mind is chronological, and you're in, therefore, what's called a beta brain state. Predominantly, you're never in just one state. And that's a fast state. It's for looking at the computers. It's for driving a car. But meditation shifts typically to something called alpha. It may go even deeper than alpha. And so you're in a different brain state. Your brain waves are different, and you're more relaxed. Your body is relaxed, and you let go of the beta, the mind chatter, and all of that. Now, but what I do now, I often lie in bed and meditate. You know, you want to be as flat a back as possible, but I don't fall asleep or even get close to sleep, though I'm in theta brain state, which is in itself close to sleep. And so I lie there, and I often listen to my guided meditations by the founders, the Jaben or Dwayne Packer. And as I lie there, I don't listen to the words, because you can get to that point, and anyway, he advises it. I listen to the frequencies and the transmissions in the meditation. And then beyond that, what I do now, because you said it's advanced, is I'm on like multiple levels, and I let like things that I want to resonate with this high level of energy float through. So a project or this event today, this podcast, can float through and radiate and harmonize and resonate with that energy. And so then I'm looking at it in that energy, and it's resonating and harmonizing all by itself. I don't have to do a thing, but it's energizing me, and I can even often see scenes like, or energetic scenes of how that event is sort of like ready to take off energetically. Because you're beyond chronological time, you're in Kairos time. And Kairos time is like synchronistic or timeless, where things float through because they belong.
Interesting. Now, you also, when you offer your services, whether meditation services or spiritual advising and that type, you talk about reading your energy by tracking its path, such as divergences, obstacles, blocks, and potential. Can you explain or embellish on that for me?
I think this comes from the light body work, where one of the founders, he says, track his energy. And so you really get used to that. You're, like I said, not listening to the words, you're looking at the energy, which you can do also when you're not with everyone, but sometimes when it feels right. Like if I'm with my Belgian light body teacher, I would be inclined not to listen to his words, but to resonate with and receive the energy he's transmitting. So in tracking energy, like on the phone, I don't do this too often, but if it's somebody who's wanting advice, you know, so then in that case, instead of listening to the words as my information source, they're there and I can use them as helpful, but the energy is moving and it will suddenly lurch to the left or to the right or kind of collapse and dip down, and I'm able to sense that. It's almost like sacred geometry of that moment, you know, how it's like a map or a diagram and of the way the energy is moving, and you can see in that by sensing it. It's not imagination in the sense of making up. It's purely sensing, like an animal can sense a track, you know, like a dog, sniff by sniffing. You can sense, not by sniffing, but just whatever source of information that is sensing how the energy is moving, and especially when it's hitting a block or a point where it's everything that was positive and beautiful, you can sense, you know, it's like an uh-oh. And so you can stop the person right there and say, well, wait, you know, what's going on right there? That's what I mean by it.
Very good. So now meditation is always good, and getting rid of those blocks, if you will, you know, looking for a job or even having writer's block. But we're going through the holidays now, effective, you know, since Thanksgiving, I guess, but also tomorrow's December 1st. So how do people get rid of that stress? Let's say they're getting ready to have a big family dinner with the family. Or maybe they're going to an office social. And those are always stressful, too, in and of themselves, because you can't have too much fun at those. And on family dinners, you have to be on your best behavior. So can anybody sort of de-stress prior to that in less than 5 minutes, for instance?
Yes. I like you implied earlier, the more practice you have, or practicing up to a certain point, the faster you can be. It can be instantaneous. But just to as little seeds, you can always function on the lowest level, or the most obvious level, let's say, called the personality level, the most obvious level. It's related to the ego level, but Jung uses the term personality, and so does Lightbody. You can always see things in terms of mass psychology, or mass mind, consensus reality. Then you'll be falling into the patterns of consensus reality, like their polarities. There's a this side and a that side. That will be consensus reality, and there will be an energy level of that. So when you meditate, and when you're applying this idea of getting into a better state, you don't fall into that obvious pattern. They're also called the lower chakra patterns, where you have envy, anger, all those things, or you see that around it. And you can notice or be aware or be prepared that there are those levels. But it's very interesting that if you go to a higher level, you know, you can feel, you can set your intention.
But how do we go to that level, though? I guess what I'm trying to figure out, do I need to sit down and close my eyes, or can I just be driving along and sort of allow myself to go out there? So I'm trying to figure out, what are the steps? Do we need to sit in a position like cross-legged? Can we just sit and lay on the bed? I mean, visually give me some steps of what a person might do.
But yes, that you can do that when you start beforehand. But I'm just talking at any second, and then I'll go back to that real fast. But at any second, therefore, being aware that there's consensus reality, and those are patterns that can be very, very troublesome. You can at any moment set your intention and sort of feel turn your eyes inside and see the energy rising up, just with the intent that you're going to get to a higher level. And
somebody just have to say to themselves, my intent is to get to a higher level.
Yes, okay. You can say, I know that these patterns are the ones that everybody has, that I'm used to, and that will be very obvious, but if you tell yourself they aren't the only ones, inside yourself you know that. Your soul level knows that. Your higher self knows that. And there's where resonance gets in, because those patterns already exist on the higher level. And if you tell yourself, I'm just so used to these everyday patterns that consensus reality thinks is the only patterns, I'm so used to that I've never tried to set my intention to feel the patterns above that. You can, of course, now backing up before an event, sit quietly for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, or just close your eyes, follow your breath, focus on your third eye, put in meditation music, guided meditation music, anything, taking those deep breaths from the belly, anything to shift, as we were talking about, to shift from beta to alpha brainwave, or just not going that far, just to, for a moment, let your mind get empty and realize, okay, everything's going to be fine. You can do that, too. That would be
so the goal is not to fall asleep, I assume.
I don't think many people first starting are going to fall asleep, because you'd have to, there would be some guided meditations that took you into a sleep state, that's true, but I don't think most people are going to.
So I just have to keep focused on their breathing and whatever their intent is to get to level 1, 2, and 3, and whatever they sort of sense 1, 2, and 3 is supposed to be like. Is there any visuals that come along with this? Will they sort of have any clairvoyant visions as they're going through these, or... What if they start to, when they're in their meditation, they start thinking about yesterday's dinner or what they have to do to finish a project tomorrow? So those sort of distractions, how do they swat those away?
If you just breathe through it, don't ever judge what happens, or don't ever set an expectation that it has to be one way. But if you're doing deep breaths, you know, from your belly, slow breaths, like count 1, 2, 3, 4 as you breathe in. You may even put a thumb on your nose and breathe in through one nostril and hold your breath for about 2-3 seconds. Put your finger on the other nostril to close that and breathe out slowly, taking deep breaths. Something like that is going to automatically stop the brain chatter. And the reason you are focusing on the breath or the third eye is to distract the brain so that it won't be having these other thoughts float through. The deep breathing is a marvelous way to keep the brain chatter away. And also just to tell yourself this one fact. When you start focusing hard on something that's not creative necessarily, because if you start doing the same thing, focusing, I've got to get it, you're not going to get it almost surely. Because the brain, the mental body starts going around in circles. And when it does, it's instead of being way out there gathering connections from everywhere, it starts getting a narrower circle till it's getting no connections at all. So if you know that it's useless, that helps. Also, if you know that one of the best ways to be creative is to walk away from the problem, like going to take a shower or whatever, then you will psych yourself up to know that it's not true that the more you focus on something or work at it is necessarily going to be the way to get the solution. So then you can give yourself permission to just relax. And in that relaxation, the solution may come to you.
Okay, very good. Now, is there a difference between meditation and energy work, and which is better?
I would say, you ask such interesting questions. I would say that meditation, and I'm just giving my answers. I would say that meditation, energy work is always meditation because it's done in a meditative way. Like, for instance, I did Tai Chi for several years. It was the most marvelous meditation, the way we did it. Now, some people don't, I guess, but it was in Belgium, and it was mystical Tai Chi. It was the most marvelous thing. I even found myself taking little meditative trips during the Tai Chi. So, yes, I think that... But also it's your intent. I guess if you could do an energy work and be resisting it, you could stay in the left, in what people call the left hemisphere of the brain. That's not entirely a correct way to think of it, but you could stay in that brainwave of beta by forcing yourself to. But I think all energy work has the chance to be, and ideally is, meditative, yes.
Very good. And then you say, though, that doing energy and meditative work really can help in changing our everyday reality. How can that be? If I'm suddenly meditating, I mean, is that going to change my energy based on
yes.
my intent? And, you know, maybe from being less stressed at Christmas time, which can tend to make, you know, people a little stressed or cranky, to being very blissful?
Yes, it changes your consciousness, and that's the key. Because your consciousness is based in different patterns, like I was saying. So if your consciousness suddenly rejects the old patterns, like you suddenly see the light, and it's just it. From then on, you understand that the lower chakras, when they're backwards, and you're in patterns of revenge and anger and envy and things like that, you're stopping the flow of energy. If you stop it, then you're never going to get, you're stuck. And that stuckness goes from the emotional body into the physical body. You get stressed, you get sick. Once you even understand those concepts in everyday reality, then you will surrender to the chances, to the benefits of the energy work. So, yes, you change your consciousness with meditation and with energy work. And that consciousness contains different frequencies according to the levels. It contains different patterns of the way you see the world. And it requires, as you get into expanding consciousness, that you live in flow, that you don't live in polarities. You have basically you're aligned with oneness, with the knowledge that we all come from one source. And when you have that alignment, you have different patterns, and those patterns trickle down so that all the time, every day, that they are the ones that make you happy. So you want to do what makes you happy. And people around you sense that because you radiate it, you hold it. I will tell you a very sort of surprise story that surprised me terribly much. I was recently, I never go to funerals, but I had, it was close people, so I went to two funerals within the last year. And the same thing happened both times, which really knocked me. I was so incredibly surprised, and I knew it was due to meditation work, and you might even call it channeling, but without intending to. It was just because the meditation had put me into a position where I could, and the people there wanted it, but they didn't ask for it, but they did, they would respond to it. So I'll give you the second one. I went to the funeral of someone I hadn't seen for decades, who I'd been close to as a child. And I walked, and I knew very few people. I mean, just the people I went with. I walked in, and the moment I walked in, there was this heart energy that overwhelmed me. I felt like, how can I keep from falling on the floor and collapsing in this gasp of emotion? And literally, physically, I could barely hold the physical sensations of the great amount of emotion that was going into my heart. And on the one hand, I knew this isn't me personally. I mean, there's a little bit of me personally. I'm resonating with it, but this is something greater. It's probably from the person who died, who is connecting with me, finding that I can be a channel to hold this emotion that a lot of the other people were probably trying to find this space, but they needed somebody to hold it for them. So that happened twice to me, and I know it really impacted me about what is afterlife and all, because where did that come from? I couldn't imagine it not somehow related. The person who died must somehow, in both instances, be transmitting their emotion to the people who could receive it and using me kind of as this vessel to go through.
Very good. Well, I sure enjoyed that. I appreciate all you know about the meditation, and I highly recommend anyone that's looking for sort of a teacher, if you will, to sort of walk us through certain meditations, because on the surface it always appears, you know, a lot more complicated, and I'm sure underneath the surface it's not that complicated. It's like anything the first time, if you don't know how to do it exactly, that it can be maybe a bit daunting and challenging. So you could be a very good guide and a teacher for someone to go through that. And I think, and agree with you, as you say, that once you get to those levels of meditation, that it helps you, A, de-stress, and B, get rid of blocks that are holding you back from writing, for instance, or finding that perfect job, or launching your business, or just, you know, because I agree that moodiness, you know, or fear, or, you know, just being upset can hold us back in any way. And I think it's always good to clear those that kind of negative energy away from us. And also, that people want to learn more about you, they should go to margaretherrill.com, but also they can read about you rather quickly on the Ariel website, because you're an Ariel Elite member, and they can read about you, your book, your teaching, and also your online workshops on light meditation as well. And also, one of my favorites about you is those books, those four-volume memoir series. It's extraordinary for anybody to do that, I think. And, of course, you have a vast journey you've been through and probably are continuing going through. And anybody wants to learn about you as a writer, editor, going to the Jung Institute, what you learned from that, and about your interesting journey from the United States to Switzerland to Morocco to Belgium, and then, of course, the gonzo journalist Hunter S. Thompson. Okay, well, very good. Margaret, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. You had the most wonderful interview manner and questions and upbeat sound. I love it.
Well, thank you. We'll talk again real soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Tune in next time, as there's always something new to learn on Ariel's Talk Time with Victoria Lynn Weston. If you're a professional psychic, astrologer, or life coach, and you're looking to gain more recognition, expand your brand, or to be listed with an exceptional group of inspiring professionals, join Ariel. Visit ariel.com.